He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
And we are blessed, I think, with the return of Jay DeMarkin to the studio and to report on a recent trip to Europe and what's going on over there before we get back to what's going on here, because we had some very interesting stuff happen in the automobile world in the last several days. And we'll get to that after Jay has finished giving us a rundown of the European state of the auto market.
Well, I've been back for almost 2 weeks now, so it's
faded.
It's faded.
You're fading.
It's always interesting to go there, and we know that the European car market is about the same size as the American car market, the U.S. car market, but the cars we see on the roads there are very different, and obviously, and we all know they're much smaller in size. Some of the brands have exactly or pretty much the same lineups as we see here. Mostly the German brands have, you know, if you look at not Volkswagen, but if you look at Audi, BMW, Mercedes, the luxury brands, they pretty much have the same lineups in Europe as they have here. One or two smaller models, but that's about it.
What's the biggest difference between when you were growing up and what you see now?
Over there?
Yep.
Just more cars on the road, but I think we can say that about
any place.
All right.
Have they gotten bigger?
I see a big change in infrastructure. I think there's a much greater effort put on trying to improve what they have to work with as far as infrastructure. I think of roads that were built when I was a young adult, 20, 25 years ago in Europe, where they were building four-lane divided highways to replace or add on to two-lane highway systems. And in a lot of cases, they've turned back those four-lane highways into two lanes and using the spare amount of space as either a turn right lane, a turn left lane, so that the markings on the road are a lot more specific than they used to be, and certainly a lot more specific than we find here. And it makes sense. Overall, they've tried to slow down traffic quite a bit. And says the guy who likes to drive fast, it makes a lot of sense. And in fact,
the Netherlands, what's with that? Because there's a speed restriction.
I don't even know what's going on in the Netherlands. But while I was in Belgium, and Brussels is a small city. I mean, it's a small big city. It's 1 million people. It is the capital of Europe. And they are seriously talking about implementing a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit across the board throughout the city limits starting in 2020 or 2021. And people, people like my mother who drive like grandmas, literally, are complaining about that. But it really, when you think about it, makes a lot of sense. And
how does that work?
Well, it works because it's a very basic rule of traffic and traffic flow is that if you have a vast amount of traffic, if you slow down the entire flow of traffic, it will keep the traffic from bottling up. And quite frankly, we could use that on some of our
in lots of different
places. In lots of different places here.
It's almost counterintuitive, but it works.
And I will tell you that I'm almost in total agreement with the concept. At higher speeds too, I went down to New Canaan a couple of days ago at about 5 o'clock in the evening, and it was dark out, and the weather wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. And while there wasn't any traffic jams going on, I just decided to go more or less the posted speed limit on once you got onto 684, and I think it's 65, and instead of trying to go 75, which much of the traffic was doing, I might have gone and pushed it to between 65 and 70, but I put it on cruise control, and I went into the right lane, which is supposedly the cruising or slowest lane of the three, and I didn't have to use my brakes once. I didn't come up and have to – I had to go around a couple of cars that were going a bit slower, but I didn't – other people were zigzagging through at 75 or 80 or whatever. And it was a very comfortable drive in the end. And what I could do at a slightly faster rate, which would take an hour and 20 minutes, took me an hour and 32 minutes doing it this way. but there was no there was no tension in the drive at all.
But isn't it different when everybody else is doing it? Or not?
How do you mean?
Well, if there is, for example, a speed restriction in an area that keeps the traffic moving, isn't that different than when you are going?
Well, you know, we used to. Some of these highways have minimum speed requirements, mm-hmm. like no less than 50. That's a pretty. And that's mostly when the main speed limit 65 range type of situation. I seldom think we run into people driving at 50 in the minimum speed, but. You know, Jay's mother might have, or my mother might have, if they'd been doing it and driving more slowly. But there's a logic to Jay's concept and comment about.
The one I've observed in Europe.
Right.
Seriously, think about it. I also took a drive in Belgium on a highway that I had not driven in over 20 years, which is like the major highway going from Brussels to the Belgian coast, which is about, I would say, 90 miles in length. A lot of traffic on it. It's two and or three lane, depending on sections of it. They've installed photo scanning license plates on that highway. There are several stretches of 5 or 10 miles in length where they have the same kind of equipment they have with Easy Pass. Structures you see over the new Easy Pass scanners, and what they do is they pretty much scan every car and they scan it 5 or 10 miles further. And if your average speed is above the posted speed limit, you make it
a citation, right?
Yeah. So you really have to follow the speed limit. And what I found is that people are following the speed limits, and in fact, I found cars that are driving below the speed limit. But people stay on the right side of the road. And they stick to the right, they move over one to pass, they get right back in front of you. Even I was shocked that I thought, why is that guy following me so close? Or why is that guy cutting in front of me? And people just do it. It's just a discipline they have. They're used to having tight traffic, so they will follow closely. They make the pass, and they cut right in front of you. And then they keep on going. And it's not aggressive. It's just
the way it does.
The way it works. Other thing, too, is that trucks are limited in speed to 90 Ks, which is roughly 55, 56 miles an hour. And they do have speed limiters, and they all drive in the right lane. And they drive pretty much on busy interstates on a three-lane highway. The right lane is a truck lane moving at 55, 56 miles an hour. You know what? It works.
That's sensible.
It's very sensible.
Well, it's amazing because you figure that really going 5 miles an hour slower or 5 miles an hour faster does not really get you to your destination any later or earlier than the speed limit speed if you choose to accept that situation. When you get off the interstates that are allowing you to go 65 miles an hour or whatever speed they allow you to go at, and get on the side roads, that's when things change. But your side road speed limits are much slower anyways. And they're two-lane roads, one lane going each direction, so you don't and they're curvy, and so you can't pass and race along them. But I think if Brussels were to institute that 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, and whether it's in kilometers over there, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's 30 Ks.
It would be agonizing. 20 sounds like an agonizingly slow speed.
Except
it may not be.
Think about driving in the city and how fast you can actually go.
Well, New York City would be fine, actually.
20 miles an hour sounds agonizing at middle of the day when traffic flows, but at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning,
it's really good.
20 miles an hour, if you can move at 20 miles an hour
steadily,
you're a step ahead.
That's why I'm interested in the counterintuitive part of it's like if you have such a low speed limit, it makes it possible. That I think is where people.
I suspect that they would arm the cities with those scanners in the city too to ensure that people were doing
it. They have
them
already.
Yeah, but they got cameras all over the place. We know that, but they're not
everywhere.
Scanning.
New York City. Every city has cameras.
The purpose of having those cameras is not just for speed.
Yeah, but they'll just add speed.
Possible to review what's going on.
It happens in the Asian cities. I think there are already cameras all over the place monitoring speeds.
There isn't.
Tokyo and who knows where else.
Yeah, here too. So, completely.
So that's my take on my European trip. And, of course, a few cars, always nice wagons, Jill, you'd love it. You'd find a wagon. I know.
What did you find in as far as the population of electric vehicles? Has it increased since you were last there that you noticed or not?
There are Tesla 3s all over the place.
Okay.
I mean, it is the best-selling car in the Netherlands.
Well, what did
right
you tell
now.
Me about Tesla sales in Sweden or something?
In a lot of the northern European countries, it is, if not the best-selling car, it's right up there.
And then some of them are going all electric by 2025. Yeah. One of those. Denmark or Sweden or Norway is all saying by such and such a year, which I think is around 2025, they want their fleets of cars to be mostly electric, if not all electric, because they're really going green fast.
Yes, they are. It's interesting. A lot of even though by European standards the Tesla 3 is not a small car, there are a lot of them. And
are people getting bigger too to fit in the not a small car?
There's a difference between the median size.
I don't know that we want to go there.
There is a difference.
Well, have the cars gotten bigger over the since you
grew
up
there?
Well,
that's what you're just talking about.
The average fleet as opposed to the Fiat 500s and the small Renaults and all that kind of thing because of the narrow city streets in some of the, like Italy and some of the mountainous countries. Are they more Tesla 3 size now in general? People have grown up.
No, there's still a lot of compact cars.
Yeah.
A lot.
Ford Escort-like. What is your mother driving?
She has a Focus Wagon. Actually a pretty cool car. It never came here, but the new Focus Wagon is actually
But it's small but big,
size.
Right? Is it like the Bolt or is it bigger?
No, it's bigger. It's more like a Volkswagen,
Jetta?
Well, what is the new version of it? The Golf Wagon, the Alltrack, that are going to discontinue now because this is the U.S. and therefore we don't need wagons. We want SUVs.
If I hadn't lived through that whole thing before, it would be one thing, where we discontinue the wagons mm-hmm. for the SUVs. But literally, it's almost like fashion, where it comes back. It's about a 32-year cycle. I totally remember, whatever.
Well, maybe we should segue into, since we were just talking about electrics in Europe, maybe we should segue into what's happening. I think the era of the electric vehicle is upon us now. We've talked for a couple of years about how long it was going to take for the Americans to ramp up, and they're ramping up in a big way. And it's coming to the LA Auto Show, which I think has opened or is opening this week. And there are numerous electric versions of vehicles that have been known to be gasoline or diesel for the last decades or centuries, whatever that goes to. And so maybe some of the salespeople in these dealerships that have been loath to suggest that when you come in to ask about buying an electric car, they try to switch you to something that they have on the lot because they don't have any electric cars to show you, will get their heads adjusted and start trying to promote electric vehicle sales for their dealers and therefore their manufacturers. I don't know.
Do with the consumer, and you still have to brainwash. You have to make the consumer the same thing that they
Well, the consumer is getting more adjusted to the concept because, you know, as I said on many shows, they had no clue what a plug-in a hybrid vehicle was all about, and they kept thinking if they got they had to have a charger for a battery in a hybrid when you never had to have a charger. That was a lame mind adjustment that they were amazed when I said you don't do anything but change your oil every few thousand miles. And they said, you don't have to have a charger? No. But okay. And then the next question was, well, how much more expensive are they? And that was a big thing that, of course, we talk about the general consumer, not the sophisticated buyer like we have across the table here, and a knowledgeable person and who might have a bank account a little bit higher than the general public. But the hybrids, at least in stickers, were always thousands more than the non-hybrid versions of the same car.
Hybrids are done, okay? Let's be clear.
They aren't done.
Yeah, they are.
They aren't done at all. And
but they are.
No, they aren't
the
done.
The big news is
they're going to keep hybrids
vehicles.
In. And they're going to have plug-in hybrids and hybrids and all electrics, and they will be around for a while because the hybrid, non-plug-in hybrid you don't have to worry about charging times and all that for the cross-country traveling salesperson who wants to make 800 miles a day with a minimum of fuss. And there will be a few of those no matter what Jay says. So hybrid will be around. But the plug-ins and the electrics are going to make big inroads.
And what are the fleets doing? You know, if you're a traveling salesman, don't you have to rent cars?
We still have traveling salesmen.
Anyways, let's not discuss that. We're having a debate about it across the table.
Big news of the week is
the Tesla pickup.
The Tesla pickup.
Okay.
I mean, we all saw that. Overwhelmingly.
For those listeners, everybody who's listening to this show, if you are listening, should have seen it on the news over the weekend because it was rampant throughout the news circles.
Have you seen it, Jill?
Of course.
Of course.
I saw it initially. I mean, it was fine.
What do you think? What are your thoughts?
You mean before the windows?
Yeah. Before, after, windows rolled up,
all
rolled
windows
down.
Cracked on all cars just about except for armored vehicles.
It didn't do it for me, but that's okay. That's not
you
my.
You don't think your dogs would like to be in the back?
It's not my idea. I understand he's got 187,000 and counting orders for it.
I had 145, so you've gone up, but that's
we're
fine.
Probably at 200 now.
Yeah, but I also it just does not resonate for me on any level. But that's okay because
you're not going to buy a pickup anyway, so it's all right.
Well, you know, it's funny because that was the first car I wanted coming out of the, you know, coming out of the city. Is I wanted to have a pickup, but that's not a direction, but I'm old, so it doesn't count. But that's not a direction I'm going. I would love to know what it, you know, how it does in terms of actual
performance.
No, just you know what you can stuff in it and how.
Well, according to the article, it's going to be able to tow 14,000 pounds, which is more than a Ford, or Dodge Ram, or Chevrolet, depending on the battery pack that you get, of course. But and Jay says it's huge. I haven't been able to figure out how big it is.
I read the dimensions and I forget. It is big. I saw pictures, actually the beginning of a YouTube video comparing a battle between the F-150 and the Cybertruck. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Cybertruck.
Yep. It was a towing contest, and you know, of course, the Tesla won and pulled the
an elephant,
a diesel train.
Well,
or whatever.
They were trying to pull each other away. You know. Tesla was pulling the Ford, and the Ford was pulling the Tesla, and the Tesla pulled the Ford, and we knew where that was going to go. And it makes a lot of sense. And it electric motors have instant torque at zero RPM, so if you're going to pull something from a start, or if you're going off-roading and climbing rocks, electric motors and the instant torque they provide are a definite advantage. There is a lot of sense to that truck. I think that design is very controversial. I think it's intended to be that way. When you read a little bit about why it is built that way, it's pretty clear that it is a unibody construction. It's not a body on frame. Those pillars that go, you know, that pointed triangle is basically there to
roll bar
to for body structure strength. Yeah. It's interesting that Musk uses the rear performance motor of a Tesla 3 on the front end and a performance motor of a Tesla S on the rear axle. I also read that there is a 3-motor version, and I don't know where the third motor goes, and I haven't gotten that far. But we're talking ranges of 300 to 500 miles.
With the biggest battery pack. And does a double-layered battery pack for the 500-mile, 3 to 500-mile range.
So let's
I do think it's a big thing. Uh-huh. I think it's a great marketing stint. Coming out the same week that Ford came out with that great product but total marketing flop, in my opinion, the
E-Mac Mustang.
The Mustang Mach-E.
The Mach-E, correct.
So that's the other big, it's an SUV crossover electric vehicle of the week. Ford came out with an SUV, which is it looks great. It's a great vehicle, has great features. It's priced right. And they branded it as a Mustang, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And they will
pay the price.
They will pay the price.
And it's just staggering how they're in a completely different field, which I won't get into, was a similar marketing, I don't even know what you want to call it. And all I'm sitting there thinking is, why? Who thought of this?
Well, it's funny because it brings me back. A couple of weeks ago, I went to see the new movie, the Ford versus Ferrari movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's obviously in that movie, there's part of the plot is all that corporate BS that goes on at Ford, as it is known to be part of the automotive industry, whether it's Ford, GM, the big three have been known to have, you know, just a lot of suits running around and making decisions by committee. I mean, it's been an ongoing joke for decades, and it's very obvious in the Ford versus Ferrari movie, even though the facts are not quite correct.
Right.
But it makes for a good movie. And that's exactly, you know, that came to my mind when I read about the Mustang,
oh, yeah,
Mach-E.
And
I thought a bunch of guys got together and they voted and
no one
clueless.
You know, it's the same in the room with your vaping. You know, hello. But
it's interesting.
No one wants to hear
amazement
that
at the automotive industry is that the people they hire very often have not a whole lot of background knowledge about what really makes an automotive industry function properly. I don't know whether Jay agrees with that or not, but
I totally agree, but then again,
the layers of the market, you know, sometimes you need a good autocrat, a benevolent dictator.
Well, you need somebody who's been out in the street.
Yes.
I don't think many of them are out in the street.
Of course not.
You know,
they
can collect cars and have a nice car collection, but they're not out on the street feeling what's really going on.
Pick a field,
in people's minds. I mean, the idea of buying a SUV Mustang doesn't cross my mind as being a logical way to market the Mustang Mach-E.
No, they probably thought, oh, wow, that's the coolest.
A Mustang has been a Mustang.
Oh, wow, that's so sexy.
A one-car line for its whole life.
How could you go wrong? Well, let me help you with that.
In our opinion in this room, I think they've gone wrong. But we'll see. You
know. How much, just very briefly, we've got a short time. How much is the Cybertruck?
The Cybertruck,
$39,995 for the cheapest model before you add on who knows how
goes
many thousands.
Goes up to $69,000.
Okay.
So it's on par. It is on par with the main three, Ford, GM, and
I think the average pickup truck
Ram
going out the door is $50,000.
They'll be right on target.
Okay.
Surprisingly.
They're right on target if they can actually do it and make money. But there's a lot of battery adjustments going on in battery costs and things like that. So they should be able to do it because it's cost a lot less to produce an electric car. You don't have transmissions. You don't have any number of things that go into the cost.
Maintenance will be a lot lesser than...
Yeah, you got two or three electric motors.
You just have to figure out how to dispose of those batteries.
A lot fewer moving parts and all that.
Well, it's interesting. I was reading something about Tesla and the reliability, and there are a few livery service companies out in California using Teslas exclusively, and they're running 300,000 miles on their Teslas. And
it tells you they last a lot.
One article I read was saying, "Oh, Tesla needs to follow the communist model," and they were talking. I think it was a Czech vehicle manufacturer back in the 30-40 years ago.
Skoda?
No, it was not Skoda, and I forget what it was. But basically, they were saying, you know, these cars, these Teslas or other electric vehicles that are going to come out in the future are just going to have to go in for refurbishing every 10 or 15 years. But basically, the car, the bones...
The bodies don't rust and the frames don't rust. They can put new electric motors in.
The motors are
new bearings,
timeless.
So they have to.
It's
going to
be bearings and even
and
brakes
packs.
With the rejuvenating braking they have on... You know, you use brakes a lot less. So basically, you're changing tires, shock absorbers, every 100,000 miles, and then seats are going to wear off and a few tech items will be replaced from time to time. So
it's a commitment. You can't change your mind, but other than that, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Do you have any safety tips you want to close with at all?
Well, we know we're going...
a lot of one-eyed front ends out there, and there are a lot of people who do not turn on their regular lights at dusk. They think that their daytime running lights are giving them enough to see, and you can't...
Well, they haven't changed their clocks yet. It's getting darker a lot earlier.
The rear ends of those cars are dark as night.
Right.
People just need to know that they need to switch on their lights if they're not on auto and they don't go on properly when it gets dark enough.
And
you can't see these cars, dark gray, black, whatever, in the dark of night when it's raining out.
I'm sure we'll talk about this in the coming weeks, but we're going into winter season. We've seen salt on the roads. Start being careful if you're considering putting winter tires on your car. Now would be a good time to do it.
And you can always slow down.
Well-treaded regular tires, non-winter tires, because anybody with down-to-the-tire wear bars on their tires are run the risk of being very on very slippery slopes. Yeah, well, you don't, you know. Anyway.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.